Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in. It's a Wednesday edition of the program live from the Big X Studios in Jeffersonville. Don't forget, if you can't join us live at 11 o'clock each day, you can find us as a podcast. We're on Apple Podcast and on SoundCloud as well. No matter how you're listening, we're glad to have you with us today. And kind of do a little coronavirus update before we jump into the bulk of the program. This is very interesting. I try to pick up stuff that I think is concerning or of note or somehow most days has a tie somehow to sports. And this is from yesterday's press conference, which is covered live here on the Big X with Governor Holcomb each day. He comes on around 2:30. The state superintendent of public instruction, so basically the top education official in our state, said yesterday that she believes school will likely start back up next year, next academic year, so after the off time in the summer, late July, early August, depending on the school system locally, with what she called a hybrid experience of remote learning and in-person classes. She went on to say that it could be a rollout reentry for students where maybe different students attend school on different days or maybe in different sessions. So what I took from it is you got an A day and a B day. You go to school basically every other day. 1 week the A's would go three times, the B's twice. The next week the B day would go three, the A's twice. Also, you could split it into sessions, maybe morning and afternoon. I don't know, that could cause some real issues, I would think, with daycare and pickups and things like that for parents that are back at work. But you think ahead to the fall semester, basically. I know it starts so early now, it's really late summer. But you think ahead to virtual learning, a combination of online learning and maybe a slow return every other day or half a day to school with not the full school population there. And you wonder, is it feasible that sports like high school football will be played if students are going, say, every other day to school or going a half day, one group is, the other group comes the second half of the day? If education isn't back to normal and academics aren't back to full-fledged, will they allow sports to be played? Is it feasible? So going to be interesting. I think we're expecting some announcements later this week from the governor on some education stuff and on maybe some slow reopening stuff is what it seems like. Nothing is confirmed. And then I mentioned yesterday we expect the IHSA to tell us more on Monday after they have one of their board meetings about what happens in the summer. I don't think anyone thinks there's going to be summer leagues and off-season workouts and things like that. And maybe they'll address or talk a little bit more about the fall as well after that meeting. But we're approaching some time, I would think, in the middle of May where we're going to start to learn more about what next school year and what once the school part of it, the academic part, is somewhat figured out, or at least there's a plan, I would think that we would know more about athletics as well. Let's jump into the full show today. Show lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we'll have some Zaxby's headlines, talk a little bit about IU's schedule for next season. We've got a couple more confirmed non-conference games. Nothing too sexy as far as opponents go, but we'll tell you who they are and update the schedule situation for you here in just a moment. Also, I guess the big news of the day when you think about things from an IU basketball perspective is Sunday was the day when the NBA draft list, underclassmen, you had to say, yes, I'm going to try to at least test the waters, sign up for it, or no, I'm not. And again, there's still an opportunity to come back, but Justin Smith is on that list. So we'll talk more about that in our headlines coming up in just a moment. Also, later in the program, we'll be joined by Dustin Dopierak of The Athletic. We'll talk more about Justin Smith, more about IU's schedule when he joins us later in the show. And a non-sports guest today, Dr. Eric Yazel, Clark County Health Officer. He joins the program for an update on how the area is handling the coronavirus and what his thoughts are, what he sees over the next few weeks, and maybe when he sees gatherings and sports returning to our area again. So hear from Dr. Yazel a little bit later in our program. And then we'll wrap things up today with former sports editor Craig Pearson of the News and Tribune in a segment presented by Major League Shirt Company, home of the $4 shirt. With Craig, he's transitioned now fully into another role at the paper. He is also handling the News and Tribune Yearly Sports Performance Awards, which are kind of modeled after the ESPYs, and the Big X has been involved. We broadcasted those on the radio and been a part of some pregame stuff there at the NetSpy Awards Ceremony, as it's called. But that obviously could look different this year because of the coronavirus. And so we're going to get an update on not only who some of the finalists in different sports are, but what the event itself could look like this year when Craig Pearson of the News and Tribune joins later in the show. We also have our senior spotlight today, another fine senior athlete here in the area, Kaylin Campbell. She's from New Washington High School and is a member of the track and field team at New Washington. We'll tell you all about her and what her academic and athletic, and she's got a long list of both, what they look like for her, and we want to give her a shout-out and congratulations today, and we'll do that later in the program. Don't forget to visit your local Honey-Baked Ham store in New Albany. Great deal going on right now. If you purchase $15 or more at the store, you are eligible to buy a large bone-in ham at 50% off. That's quite a deal. $15 purchase, and you can buy a bone-in ham at 50% off. That's at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's get into our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Zaxby's with locations in Jeffersonville and New Albany. And I want to start our headlines with Justin Smith. A little surprised. I mean, he's got potential, you would think, down the road, but still a lot of things need to come together in his time at Indiana for him to have a chance to play the game professionally at a high level, especially in the NBA. But what's the reason not to? You know, some people, I think, may be surprised that Trace wasn't more apt to at least go down that path and learn what he could. It is a different year. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of unknown. And so if you know for sure you're going to return, others say, good, don't even go down that path. But for others, it's an exploratory time, and I would have to assume that is what Justin Smith sees in this opportunity to declare as an underclassman. As of now, he would have until June 5th to say, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to come back to college. However, if the NBA draft is pushed back, and I think that it will be, I think everybody thinks it will be, that June 5th date is likely going to be pushed back as well, which means that with Justin Smith, although I think definitely he's returning to Indiana, my opinion, it could put some limbo. And I mentioned this yesterday, for college coaches to looking to finalize rosters and know exactly what they have for next season, if that date were to get pushed back to early August or late July, whatever it could be, whenever the new date of the draft will be. And again, we all expect that there'll be a new date for the draft. Lots of talk about it. Nothing has been said for sure. But, you know, that pushes back your unknown if you're a college coach trying to prepare for the upcoming season, especially with an off season that very likely is going to include very little, if any, in-person workout, training, on-the-court stuff, open gym, open runs at night like, you know, have went on for years. So Justin Smith declares for the draft. His deadline to do that was on Sunday, and according to Jonathan Gavoni at ESPN, 205 players on this year's early draft list, the early entrant draft list for the draft. Yet last year it was 233. The year before that it was 236. So not a big change, but you know, 30 or so less players on the early entrant list this year. And I was wrong. The deadline's not June 5th. It's June 3rd right now. But again, could be moved to later in the summer, with the COVID-19 pandemic likely going to, I would think, push back the NBA draft. Couple IU schedule notes in our headlines today. IU has two more what's called guarantee games locked in for next season. Nebraska-Omaha is one. That game will take place on Tuesday, December 29th. And just a handful of days before that, Robert Morris will come to Bloomington on December 22nd. According to Inside the Hall, Nebraska-Omaha, this is one of those pay games. They'll receive $95,000 to come to Bloomington and play Indiana. Robert Morris will receive $92,500, according to contracts that Inside the Hall obtained a copy of. So there is money in college basketball on a backside that maybe regular fans don't even know, with some of these guaranteed and pay games. When a mid-major level opponent comes to a high major team to play, they're often getting a nice payday. We once had Mike Davis on the show when he was at Texas Southern, and that's how his team at a low budget college in D1, that's how they stayed in nice hotels and ate great meals during the season. They played almost all of their non-conference games on the road. Many of those games were paydays. Some of them were really good paydays. And that's was their number one fundraiser, number one budget, so they could actually not stay in low-budget stuff or not have to do the bare minimum. So, again, just an example, $95,000 and $92,500 going out to some opponents coming to Bloomington this year. Also yesterday, Indiana, with a recruiting note to pass along, they offered a five-star class of 2022 guard. Sky Clark is his name, and he is originally from California. He played last year at a school, Heritage Christian, in Northridge, California. Had a great year there, but he's transferring, apparently, more closer to the area, Brentwood, Tennessee, a great school, obviously, just outside of Nashville for the 2020-2021 school year. So, again, as a sophomore, averaged almost 25 points a game, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals. Very good player in that class of current sophomores that will be juniors. And as he moves not to the Midwest, but closer, obviously, where the coaches can watch much closer and develop a relationship much easier, he has got an offer from IU. So another offer goes out. I think that's 3 or 4 offers now, with a couple of those coming in recent weeks in the 2022 class. That's a look at our headlines for this Wednesday edition of the program. Don't forget our senior spotlight today. Later in the program, we'll tell you all about Kalen Campbell of New Washington High School, member of the track and field team. Lots of great guests, tons of stuff coming your way. Stay with us for this Wednesday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Wednesday program with Dustin Dopierak of The Athletic. He covers Indiana, Purdue, and Butler for The Athletic, and he joins us Wednesdays to talk some college basketball and sometimes more. Dustin, great to have you with us. A little surprised that Justin Smith on the early entrant list for the NBA as far as underclassmen that want to maybe test the waters for the NBA. Your thoughts on that? And I think that clearly we think this is a learning experiment for him to find out more about his game, to maybe get some advice before ultimately he would return for another season at Indiana.
Yeah, that would be my first thought. I mean, I'm, you know, obviously I don't think he's getting an agent, so he's going to maintain his eligibility. I'm surprised. I mean, you know, obviously between Indiana, Purdue, and Butler, each of them has one player that's entered into the draft, and I think each of them are guys that I think would make sense for them if there was going to be any kind of regular process. I mean, I think if you could guarantee, you know, right now you can't guarantee that though that anybody will get workouts, you know, whatsoever, much less, you know, guys that are this far down the line. I mean, these guys, I don't think any of the three of them, Justin Smith, no Joe Eastern, or Jordan Tucker, would get a combine invite, even if there was a combine. And I don't hold out any hope that there's going to be a combine based on the way things are going right now. Usually even beyond that, you usually get, okay, you come in as a filler so that, you know, guys can play 3-on-3 or 4-on-4 or whatever at workouts. And, you know, that at least gets you, in the door. I mean, Derek Smith got to work out a little bit for the Pacers last year that way, just by, okay, you know, just go get somebody else a big they can work against. But for these guys, it's just not probably going to have much of an opportunity. I mean, I guess they can get some feedback, but I mean, there's other ways to get feedback. It's easier to do that. You don't necessarily even have to declare to make it happen. So, I mean, I guess that's the point of it, is still to get some feedback. But I think all three of them are going to find out in pretty, no uncertain terms that, hey, there's just not a spot for you right now. You need to get some things right before you do this. I mean, I wonder what Justin's deal is. I mean, I wonder if there's more to it than just wanting to, test the waters. But I mean, I think all three of them are guys that are big and they're athletic, so I think they want to find out what else they got to do, to maybe get in the NBA.
Talking to Dustin Dopierak of The Athletic. That process, you mentioned it could look a lot different this year because of the pandemic we're currently in. The date now, June 3rd, to say Justin Smith and others that are on this list are coming back to school. But if the draft is postponed, and by all accounts, I think a lot of people that know a lot more about it than me think it will be, that date likely going to be bumped back as well, correct? Or wouldn't you think?
I would think. I mean, I guess the other issue is I don't know that you have to postpone the draft. I mean, I think you can have the draft. I can't remember exactly how the draft formula goes, how much it has to do with wins and losses and how much it has to do with, like, you know, where you actually fit in the playoffs. I guess they would have to do that for slotting purposes. They'd have to wait until the playoff is over. But, I mean, you wouldn't have to move it if you cancel the rest of the season. I guess that's all depending on whether they expect there to be a season, how they expect that to play out. You know, would they be willing to slot the draft based on where you're seated in the playoffs as opposed to where you finish in the playoffs, if you were able to have the draft while the playoffs are still ongoing? I mean, obviously the NFL draft has proven that you don't need to be able to have it, in a physical location. I mean, you can, draft remotely for the NBA just as easily as you can draft remotely for the NFL. I would think that the if they were to push it back, I would think that deadline would move back. But I wouldn't be sure of that, especially just because I think college coaches are going to be like, look, man, I need to know whether my guy's coming back or not. Don't drag me out any longer than you have to. Because, I mean, I'm sure, you know, these guys already, I mean, are probably like, I know Butler is sort of like, okay, what do we do here? Do we take a grad transfer to fill in for Jordan Tucker, or don't we? I mean, what are we doing here? And there's still another, month and a half to go before there's a deadline on this. So if they extend that another month or so, I don't think college coaches are going to sign on for that. I don't know if they have to sign on for that, but they're certainly going to be annoyed by it. But I think it makes sense. I mean, to keep the deadline where it is, if they're moving the draft back, I mean, I don't know when there would be a combine anyway. So it's like, I would just sort of be surprised, like, okay, like how far deep into it do you want to make a decision as to whether or not you're playing or not? And like, how long can you drag out, decisions for these college coaches in terms of whether they go get another transfer or not? It doesn't seem to make a whole ton of sense to me to push it much back beyond June 3rd. But I mean, there's just so many potential moving pieces for this. It's just really hard to guess. I mean, what do you do with this thing? Do you have to move it back? Do you not have to move it back? If you don't move it back, what do you do? I don't know. I think for the sake of college coaches, I think I'd be surprised if they push the deadline back too much further than June 3rd.
Absolutely. Talking with Dustin Dopierak of The Athletic. Speaking of The Athletic, and I want you to give a little preview here for people that subscribe, and if you don't, this is the type of good content you'll find even during a slow time for live sports. You've got a nice piece up about, and it's kind of a series, if I understand correctly. Mm-hmm. You're talking with coaches of the coaches. So who raised mm-hmm. Archie Miller in basketball? Who does he get his tutelage from? Obviously, his father is one of those people and a very important a person in that process. But you're doing this not just with Coach Miller, but with lots of coaches. Preview your story on the background as far as where Archie Miller got his basketball knowledge and sense from.
Yeah, no, obviously it mostly comes from his dad, and that's what really built him. But I thought, okay, you know, we've written about his dad before, and also Archie's not big on people calling his dad. So figured, okay, who's the next option? He went to North Carolina. He went to, you know, talked to the guys that were at North Carolina State at the time. Herb Sendek was there. Herb Sendek is also a Pittsburgh guy. I mean, he and Archie and the Millers are from opposite sides of the city. You know, Archie's from kind of the west suburbs out in Beaver County. It's kind of out past the airport to the west of the city. And, you know, Herb Sendek is from the east suburbs from Penn Hills. It probably takes about, I grew up in that area, so it takes probably about 45 minutes to an hour to get from one to the other. But obviously, it's a pretty tight-knit group of the basketball sort of, you know, I guess family, if you will, in Pittsburgh is pretty tight-knit because obviously it's not as big of a sport in Pittsburgh, but it's produced some really good coaches, you know, probably better coaches than players. John Calipari's from out there, Archie, Herb, you know, there's some other guys, you know, Sonny Vaccaro is a guy who grew up about 15 minutes from where I did. So there is some basketball, you know, roots in Pittsburgh. And, you know, so Herb knew the Millers, and he had recruited Sean when he was an assistant at Providence. So and then Sean decided to work for him. So Sean was actually on the staff when they recruited Archie, which obviously made it a lot easier to get him. So I thought that was sort of an interesting take. But, I mean, Herb obviously was impressed by Archie because, I mean, he won two state championships for his dad at Blackhawk High School. And, you know, saw him obviously as a skilled guy, a really smart guy, and a guy who could really shoot it. But, hey, this is the guy that I could use to run my offense, you know. He had probably got him maybe 3 or 4 years into maybe it's 2 or 3 years, I think, into Herb's tenure at North Carolina State, and took him to a tournament in 2002 with Anthony Grundy. They beat Michigan State that year and took a really, really good UConn team to the brink before losing to them by 3 points. But, you know, just saw him grow up a lot. I mean, he was a pretty skinny kid when he got there. I mean, he ended up being pretty muscled up. He said he was one of the strongest guys. You know, John Grocci made a point of saying he was one of the strongest guys on the team. But so Archie got to learn from not just Herb, but really a team full of guys who would go on to be head coaches. I mean, again, Sean, obviously, but also, like I said, John Grocci was at, you know, was at Akron now, you know, was at Illinois for a while. He was on that staff. Larry Hunter, the late Larry Hunter, is another guy that was on that staff as well. I think he was at Western Carolina after that. So I got to learn from a lot of smart guys and take kind of the next step in his tutelage and getting outside of, you know, getting away from his dad a little bit, you know, being able to process something else. So we learned a lot about the kind of Princeton-ish offense that Herb Sendek's got, and kind of added some more elements, you know, from there. Then he worked for Herb as a graduate assistant right out, and then he came back and worked for him some more, both at North Carolina State and then at Arizona State when Herb went there. So that was kind of another one of his coaching mentors. Obviously, again, his dad, you know, Johnny Miller, who's just a legend in Western Pennsylvania, you know, was the main guy that taught him everything. But this, you know, going to North Carolina State and learning from a bunch of guys that were connected and ended up being, you know, ended up being head coaches. And, you know, again, Herb won, I think, 450-some games, has won 450-some games, still coaching at Santa Clara now. So he got to learn from a lot of, you know, really smart basketball minds, you know, that really sort of shaped his view of the game.
Interesting stuff and good story you can find at theathletic.com. Dustin, as always, thanks for the chat. Keeping things moving here in this off-season, this very strange off-season, I might add, and we appreciate your time to come on with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks as always, Matt.
All right, Dustin Dopierak of The Athletic. Again, check that story out on Archie, and gives you even more sense of his upbringing and who coached him to get where he's at the level that he currently is. All right, we'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with a lot more in the next segment. Dr. Eric Yazel, we're going to step away from sports a little bit for an update on COVID-19, but I am going to ask him when he thinks public events and maybe sporting events, high school stuff, could come back based on what he sees in this area. So some good stuff with him coming up next, and stuff I think as we maybe start to transition to the next phase of this response to our pandemic that you'll want to hear. Stay with us for that. And then after Dr. Yazel, more basketball talk ahead. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Wednesday edition of the program. Dr. Eric Yazel, Clark County Health Officer, is my guest again. And from time to time, we've stepped outside a little bit of the sports realm to check up on how the coronavirus and this pandemic is affecting us locally right here in our communities. And Dr. Yazel has been at the head of the fight of this thing. And Doc, great to have you today. I hope you're getting a little bit of rest. I know you're being pulled in multiple different directions, but I guess I'd like to start with this. We're in the tough part of this thing. I think according to comments that you've made with other media and publications and what others have said that, you know, it's not been easy. It's not been great, but maybe it's been better than what it could have been. What's your reaction to how the public is heeding and has heeded some of the warnings and the new regulations from governments to protect yourself, to stay at home, to only make essential trips? How have people reacted, and how are we handling this thing here in Southern Indiana?
You know, I think we've actually done a great job. Don't get me wrong. I know it's been a big source of frustration for a lot of people. The quarantine and stay-at-home stuff is really, really difficult. But it has worked for what it was intended. Our cases around here locally, it used to double about every 3 days before we did all this, and now it's gone to 5 days. It looks like from the number standpoint that, you know, we all talk about flattening the curve. It's done that. It hasn't been perfect or anything, and I know there's been some slip-ups here and there and some outbreaks and things like that, but the whole goal was to keep the cases low enough that the local healthcare system could meet that onslaught of cases, and we've been able to do that, and we're positioned great now and in much better shape at this stage than I thought we would, just night and day. You know, we're almost to May, and we still have all the resources we need, beds, ventilators, PPE, things like that, so... You know, I think we're really, really well positioned.
Dr. Yazel, when we spoke with you some weeks ago, even though the virus was just beginning to become a reality to some in our immediate area, you clearly, in our interview and in our conversation before that off the air, you clearly had been preparing for this, I'm sure like many other health officials in our state and country, for really months. So looking back on what you knew about COVID-19, the virus then, symptoms, how it affected people, how in some cases it killed people, and looking back at what you know now that it has affected some folks in our local area as well, any changes in your thoughts about this thing? I know you see different symptoms, I think, recently added to the official description of the virus from the CDC, but how have you maybe changed your thoughts or increased your thoughts on this virus and how it affects people and what the symptoms are and what the good cases of this virus are, maybe what the lighter cases of this virus look like?
You know, I think there are a few things with it. Number one, it really did behave locally kind of like we expected it to be honest. The people who did get very sick really tended to be those, you know, the older population with multiple medical conditions and things that, you know, that we knew were at risk from other locations. Some of the areas of the community that we were worried about from the get-go were some of the ones that had some outbreaks, you know, our nursing homes. You know, we were worried about the shelters and jails and some of our group homes and things like that as well. They've held up pretty well through some of this, knock on wood. But we still have to watch them and some of our bigger factories and things like that. I was really worried about our workforce getting sick, and I think you know, we did a good job here locally stressing the importance of protecting yourself and giving people adequate PPE. So we didn't see a lot of our healthcare workers and first responders and people like that that got sick or quarantined or anything. So that's been a positive. And I think probably the most surprising thing is that we never did see that surge. You know, I thought I was very hopeful that it wouldn't be as bad as I thought, but look, we've really seen pretty consistent numbers from towards the end of March all the way till now. I mean, it's there. We're seeing cases. We're seeing people very sick. But it's kind of been a just slow, steady grind, not a big explosion like we thought it might be. So that's obviously encouraging, because as long as we know the numbers, you know, are consistent, we can always meet that. So,
talking with Dr. Eric Yazel, Clark County Health Officer. No new phase yet here in Indiana, but I think as we watch some other states begin to make changes, begin to lessen up on some of the stay-at-home requirements and other businesses that can now open. We expect, if things continue down a reasonable path here in our state and locally, that eventually some things will lighten up here in Indiana as well. If and when that happens here locally, and say some restaurants open at a certain capacity or an additional set of stores reopen or allowed to reopen, how important will mask be at that point? You've seen Kentucky say starting May 11th, you need to wear a mask. It's going to be a requirement to wear a mask out in public. In Indiana, there has been, I don't know, as much guidance or a rule about that, at least thus far. But, you know, everybody's saying, I need to get some masks. It sounds like that's going to be part of the new normal. What are your thoughts on masks, how they can help protect you, how they can protect others from you, potentially, if you're an asymptomatic carrier? And is masks going to become a part of our new normal when you go out?
I think to some degree, yes. I think it's a little bit of a touchy subject. I mean, I know there's been a lot of frustration in Kentucky over the, you know, individual rights side of things and things like that. But also people have a right to go out and not be at risk of getting infected by others. So, I do think it's going to be something that we see a lot. I don't know that Indiana is going to do a mandate like Kentucky does. I've tried to kind of ask around through back channels to get a feel for that, if that's going to be part of our process as well. But I do think, you know, as we've come to realize that there's not going to be a surge, I do think a, you know, gradual, data-driven, you know, smart reopening is what we need to do. And I think as we do that, masks are going to be a big part of that, especially, you know, in areas where people are going to be in close contact and things like that. So I hope most people will do that and make good decisions. What I don't want is the minute things open up, people go buck wild and just go everywhere and anywhere without any regard for others and things like that, because that's when we'll start seeing some secondary outbreaks, and that's going to make our job really, really tough. So hopefully even as we open up, which I really hope we can do, because I know people are hurting. A lot of people have gotten furloughed, good friends of mine, you know, people have lost their jobs, restaurants are hurting. You know, I think it's great if we can safely reopen and still protect our vulnerable populations. And I do think, like I said, masks and other self-protective mechanisms will be a big part of that.
All right. Now, Doc, a lot of sports fans listening to this show, so I've got to ask about public events and, of course, specifically gatherings of people, thinking along the lines of sports, but also many other public events and even family gatherings that could fall under this category of a question. Thinking ahead to the fall, to high school sports and football, thinking ahead to college football, you hear the possibility of a second wave later in the fall or into the winter. Even though things could be, and we sound to be, on the road to recovery and on the road to slowly opening some things up, as you said, data-driven in that process, we still a way off from the conversation or from any sort of announcement down the line that, you know, okay, you can increase the number of people at your gathering. You can increase it again, and then you get to a reasonable number where maybe you could have a sporting event with some sort of fans there. Public events, sports, gatherings of reasonably large numbers, whether it's high school to pro, just an opinion, I know, but you have a greater opinion than any of us and greater knowledge than any of us. Could that be something pretty far down the line still?
You know, I think that how things go when we open back up in the next month or two will really go a long way to decide that. I do think sporting events are tough because, you know, you're getting so many people into such a short, to such a small area. Everybody's yelling and things. So it just seems like such a, you know, tough recipe to prevent transmission and things. On the flip side of it, I mean, number one, I'm the biggest, you know, high school football and basketball fan and a huge Indiana fan. I'm like, oh, I can't even fathom having to go through a fall and winter without being able to watch my IU sports. And I was joking the other day, you know, if you're governor of Alabama and you cancel the football season down there, I mean, that's probably the best way to never get reelected again. So I don't know what'll happen. You know, I think if when we open back up again, if things go pretty smoothly, you know, I do think we'll have some flare-ups at nursing homes and saw probably some big factories here and there. But if things go better than expected, then I think, you know, we'll see that to some degree. I've thought about what that looks like. You know, do you limit the number of spectators, or how you do that? But I do think we'll see some degree of fall sports. At least I'm very hopeful. I mean, you know, kids deserve it. And as a fan, I'd love to see it. So hopefully we can figure out a way to make it work. But that's just another thing that, you know, doing things right now and making good decisions and kind of limiting the spread will go a long way to ensuring we can have those things that we love this fall and in this winter. So
absolutely. Doc, a couple things to close out, just to give your opinion and your guidance to people. Obviously, you know, hand washing is something that if you weren't doing it many, many times a day before, I think everyone is now and should obviously continue that. But when you or your family go out in public, say you have to make a trip to the store today to pick up some groceries or to the pharmacy or whatever, you know, again, we're still in that essential trip type mode. When you go out, what are some of the precautions that you take? You know, do you wear a mask? Do you wipe down groceries and purchases? You know, that's kind of been a common thing. How far do you take this? And I'm curious, kind of as a health professional, somebody that is really at the front line of this for our local area fighting and knowledge situations, what are your thoughts on some of those precautions that you should take and that you do take?
You know, and it's a fine line. You can drive yourself crazy with some of the precautions. I've talked to some people who, you know, literally are bleach wiping everything that comes in their house and things like that. And I don't mean to minimize it. That's a great way to prevent, but I mean, you really can just, you know, make yourself a nervous wreck that way. Personally, what I do, number one, I have a little bit of benefit. If there's a benefit to these weird hours I keep as an ER doctor, you know, I get off at 1 or 2 a.m. sometimes, and that's when I'll try to do some of my grocery shopping and, you know, picking up other errands and things like that, is when there are not as many people out the store. And, you know, that's what I tell people if they're higher risk, just go at a little different time. You know, don't pick, you know, Sunday afternoon to go to the grocery store when everybody in Southern Indiana will be out there. I do think wearing a mask when you're out like that is a good idea. Vigorous hand washing. And, you know, one of the biggest things is just not touching your face. And I think that's one thing that surprised a ton of us during all this is, you know, nobody's ever really been aware of how much you touch your face until now. And you do it a lot. Everybody does. So try to be cognizant of that. I think it's a good idea to wipe some things down of anything that's public that's touched a lot. I think that's a good idea. And then, you know, just do your best. And the more risk you are, the older you are, the more other medical problems you have, things like that, then the more aggressive precautions you need to take. So,
absolutely. Dr. Eric Yazel, Clark County Health Officer, kind enough in his very, very busy schedule at the front line of this thing to join us now a couple times on the program. And Doc, I hope as we have you back again down the road that we have even a more improved situation to talk about. Appreciate you sharing some knowledge and an update with us once again today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you getting some information out there for us, and you do a great job, man. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Dr. Yazel with us, and again, our hats off to him and all the folks on the front line of this thing. We'll head to a commercial break. When we come back, we'll have more for you. We'll jump back into some sports, and Craig Pearson, former sports editor of the News and Tribune, now in another role at the paper, is going to join us. We'll talk about the big Netsby Awards that they schedule at the end of high school sports each year. That's obviously likely going to look very different this year. That and more coming your way. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
You know, a basketball hero around here is treated like a god.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
You know, most people would kill to be treated like a god just for a few moments.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Final segment of our Wednesday program. We're going to talk with Craig Pearson of the News and Tribune here in just a moment. Also, our senior spotlight today for a spring sport athlete. We'll be spotlighting another athlete from the area today, Kaylin Campbell of New Washington Track and Field, coming up a little bit later as we close things out today. Craig, great to have you with us. Craig, of course, former sports editor of the paper, in this segment presented by Major League Shirt Company, home of the $4 T-shirt. They offer custom apparel to meet all of your apparel needs, T-shirts, uniforms, corporate wear, promotional items, whether it's screen printing, embroidery, or even fully sublimated uniforms. Let Major League Shirt Company outfit your team or organization today. You can find out more at mlshirtco.com. Craig, former sports editor in a new role at the paper, and one of those roles is managing the great News and Tribune Sports Performance Yearly Awards, which have become an awesome way to cap off the high school sports year in Clark and Floyd counties. And just like everything else, with this coronavirus, it is going to be affected. That awards ceremony going to be affected as well.
Absolutely, Matt. Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's probably the highlight of my new role. I mean, I'm taking on marketing and some other things as well. Being able to operate the Netsbys is going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Like you said, yeah, and like Dr. Yazel was saying too, it's things seem to be looking up, but it's still difficult to imagine having a event with 500 plus people in one room right now. So we're certainly discussing and making some plans for a possible online show where we'll put together ways to honor some of these athletes and do some interviews with some social distancing sort of scenarios and that sort of thing. And we'll, you know, last year we put together some great videos for our inspiration winner and our lifetime achievement winner. We'll certainly look to do that as well. We're in those conversations and really looking forward to putting on a great show one way or the other and honoring all the great athletes. And, you know, one thing in particular, we're definitely going to honor all of our, recognize all of our senior athletes, especially some of these spring sports kids that didn't get to have the season. That's just heartbreaking for them. And I know we had some great teams looking forward to competing and at the highest levels this spring.
Yeah, no question. If you've never been to the Netsbys, just a first-class deal. It's modeled a lot off the ESPYs, which ESPN started a number of years ago. And this is just a great way for kids to wrap up their high school sports careers, especially the outgoing seniors, and to kind of highlight a great year of always state championship-level teams, players headed off to college if they're seniors, and, of course, great coaches we have in the area as well. What's the timetable look like to know more about this event, and will it become an online or virtual event? Will there still be a way to have it in person? Have you guys set a target date to know, okay, it's going to go this way or it's going to go that way?
Yeah, with the way some of the news is going, I think – by next week, we'll know for sure. So that's about all I can say on that. So
sounds good.
We'll work with Brent Rogers at Sounds Unlimited. He's been the MC since the thing started, and if we go the online route, he'll play a big role in helping us put that production together.
Let's go through some of the finalists. I know that football is now out. Of course, we had a great football year. Some individuals I'm really looking forward to underclassmen to seeing come back, we hope, for football this fall. Basketball, the finalists have not been put out just yet, but maybe highlight some of the fall athletes, especially football, that are going to be up for recognition here in this Sports Performance Yearly Awards that is put on by the News and Tribune each year.
For sure. Yeah, all of our fall sports athletes are up on the newsandtribune.com. You can find those. Just search Netsby, NTSPY, and you can find all those stories. But, yeah, football-wise, we had, we had some talent. We have some talented football players, without a doubt. Winker's right of Floyd Central, obviously, with the big year running the football. Marion Lukes at Charlestown, who's headed to Central Michigan. And Cole Hussing, who's headed to kick at the Division I level. So I think Winker's right, will be potentially a Division I caliber football player by the time he finishes his senior year next year. And, I think just to mention volleyball too, they got three future Division I athletes and Macy Garrison, Courtney Glossbeck, and Allie Horning as well. So just a great group. And yeah, we're looking forward to, I've talked to Josh Cook about basketball a bit. Obviously great talent there with first team All-State Trey Kaufman and Indiana All-Star Trey Coleman. And, you know, you got Jake Heidbreder at Floyd Central and Jacob Jones and Cooper Jacoby. And that list could go on there for a bit, but so some tough decisions there, but we only picked three. So it's going to be interesting to see how some of these finalists play out for those and for the overall player of the year to recognize the top athlete overall.
Yeah, no question. Some very tough decisions each year just to come up with the finalists in some of the different sports because, basketball, football, so many sports. We have so many talented players each year, it seems, that very tough to whittle down to the finalists. That's a tough job for Josh and some support that he has with the sports staff. Craig Pearson, former sports editor, used to be with me every Wednesday talking about the Netsby Awards. And, Craig, I know the plan is as we get closer to the event, no matter how it may look, the actual event itself, we're going to have you back to recognize some of the finalists and to promote the event. So I'd say every so often expect to hear from Craig between now and the Netsbys for this 2020 year. Thanks for all your work on this. I always say it this way, first-class event, done the right way to recognize the high school coaches, athletes, teams that we have in our two-county area. And with as good as they are on the field or on the court, this event, I think, is at that level as well. So we appreciate all the efforts.
All right, Matt. Well, thank you very much for having me. Yeah, I look forward to talking more here in the coming weeks.
Definitely. Craig Pearson, News and Tribune. This segment brought to you by Major League Shirt Company, home of the $4 T-shirt. Don't forget that if you need to raise money for your team or event, let Major League Shirt Company's online fan stores work for you. You can outfit your fans and raise money with very little effort. Major League even does all the sorting. All you need to do is cash the check. You can find out more about this program at Major League Shirt Company by visiting their website, MLShirtCo.com. That's MLShirtCo.com. It's time for our senior spotlight for a spring sport athlete. Today we recognize Kaylin Campbell of New Washington High School. She's a member of the track and field team there. Lots of accomplishments, athletics and academics. All-conference long jump in 2018, all-conference high jump both in 2018 and 2019, all-conference 200-meter dash in 2018, all-conference 100-meter dash in 2019, Southern Athletic Conference most valuable runner in 2019, three-time regional qualifier for New Washington Track and Field, and a state qualifier in her junior year last year, 2019. Academically, very strong as well. Senior class president at New Washington, a student ambassador for Greater Clark County Schools Academies, National Honor Society, and a student council member involved in that program as well at New Washington. So very busy when it comes to school and on the field as well. Other information about her as far as who she is, loves to play volleyball, loves to play basketball as well, enjoys time with her friends and family also, and she wanted to give a shout-out to her biggest support system during the track season. She said, "It's her parents. They always push me to do my very best," is what she wrote about her family. Kaylin is the daughter of Jamie and Jeremy Campbell, and she plans to attend Ivy Tech in the spring of next year and major in either hospitality administration or become a healthcare specialist. She was submitted all of her information by one of her coaches from New Washington High School. So, Kaylin, we say to you, congratulations on a tremendous career. It's very clear that you're track and field aspirations were going higher and higher each year, and we're no doubt that this would have been a very big senior year. But your work not on the field and in the classroom has not gone unnoticed, and we're so very sorry that your senior year taken away from you because of the current pandemic that we find ourselves in. Kaylin Campbell, that is our spring sport spotlight for a senior athlete today here on this Wednesday edition of the program. Our hats off to Kaylin at New Washington High School. That's going to wrap it up for Wednesday. Back with you Thursday on the program. Alex Bozich joins me, and a lot more as well. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.